Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Shoppable Business, your number one source for procuring products for your business in the Philippines. Discover authentic branded products online. Shop bulk, save big, and secure authentic products with official sales invoices at Shoppable Business today. And also brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
I love the fact that real estate is still a physical asset that can't just like disappear and then go to zero in value. Although, you know, potentially can go to zero in value as we see in some of the offices in America, but the physicality of actually meeting people and doing collaboration work, you know, that part's still super exciting.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Share Podcast. We are 5 years old, and of course, we're going to start our fifth year with someone who I admire dearly. My God, I've been wanting to get this guy on the show, but I had to wait a little bit further.
Because, 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years of talking and annoying everyone on a Monday morning. But again, I've always wanted to have you on the show, but I said, I got to have you at the right time. And thank you for coming on the first episode of our fifth year. Because today we will welcome the chairman of KMC Solutions, Mr. Mike McCullough.
Wow, thanks guys. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you again. Shout out to KMC Solutions because for the longest time, we had a hell of a year last year. Not the good one. We took refuge in KMC, Cyber Gamma. Yeah. They have a podcast studio. Thank you for allowing us to do our magic here.
Not a problem.
And we are recording in a KMC.
So right here on the 29th floor.
Yep.
In Ortigas. Yeah.
You didn't know which floor we had to go through and we went up. It was funny.
We have five floors here.
Oh, is it?
We're 15, 16, 27, 28, 29.
The fact that you even remember each floor.
Tough. We have over 65 floors across the Philippines.
65 floors. We speak right now. We're recording this in 2024. Yeah, it's around
February 20th or something.
Right? 20 something, right? Yeah. But again, that's going to be a lot of floors. And before we even talk about all the floors, I need to ask you the $1 million question. Mike?
Can I call a friend?
later. What's your hustle?
What's my hustle? Man, you know, I guess what kind of really keeps me going is just trying to make things better, making it easier to do business, easier for foreign companies to come here and hire talent and find talent and motivate talent, engage with their talent. And that's why we, you know, design offices that look and feel and operate like this.
Again, just do numbers real quick.
Yeah.
How many companies are able to operate because KMC exists? And under those companies, I think you even source the staffing. Do you have an idea how many people?
We have 800 logos that we invoice every month.
800 companies.
800 companies right now.
And around the
And that's count? that's not like all the freelancers and, stuff like that. God. It's probably another 250 or something like that.
What?
Yeah.
How many offices do you even have? Because
we're in 27 buildings.
Across the whole
over 20,000 desks in the Philippines only.
And I'm pretty sure a big chunk of you guys work in KMC or in a booth or a big ass space and whatnot, whatever the size is. You guys did an amazing job. And I saw the rapid rise. This happened over the past, I don't know, five, 10 years, but you just kept doubling down and doubling down and doubling. And again, these things are not a fluke. And if you want to shout out my good friend and your good friend, Mr. Alex, I know Patrick, not that.
That's the wife.
Not bad. Patrick Gentry, who then told me the rule of 3 and 10. He told me about it very early 2020 or early 2019.
30% margins and 10% growth, or what? 10% margins and 30% growth? What is it?
No, I mean, everything breaks every time your company's.
Oh, after your first 30 headcount.
Yeah. It multiplies every multiples of threes and tens.
Yeah, that's actually
And
very
my
true.
God, the scale that you guys have done is amazing. But I want to talk about that later.
Okay.
Because again, we have to sit back before we even talk about creating jobs, operationally, making everything efficient. We have to go all the way back to Oregon.
So, okay. We're going back 17 years, basically.
There you go. Because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine.
Okay.
There you go. This is going to be a 16-hour flight.
I just did it.
Oh my God, it was not fun. Right? So again, I've had a chance to go to Oregon around this same time last year. It's beautiful.
January?
Late January, early Feb.
Yeah.
To watch the Portland Trail Blazers because I watched my idol, Chauncey Billups, which also I was lucky to catch Damian Lillard.
You told me you got to meet him. No?
I met him.
Yeah.
I met him. And I got my jersey signed. I got to go to the tunnel.
That's amazing.
It's one of the best days of my life.
For sure.
Easily in my Mount Rushmore of my best days of my life. Easy. But again, I want to understand before you even thought of KMC and whatnot, what was it like growing up in the States and in Oregon? And did you have any influences in hustling very early on?
Okay. So, you know, one of the first photos I show to the team is me as a 5-year-old selling lemonade in front of our house.
Okay.
And this is in San Diego.
Oh.
So we would have had a bunch of, you know, citrus trees and avocado trees and lemon trees and stuff like that. So I decided to make lemonade and sell it, I think, for 50 cents.
Okay.
And there's a photo of me, you know, wooden sign painted in horrible handwriting red and lemonade, 50 cents.
Right.
So, that's a photo I occasionally share with the team about my very early entrepreneurial days. I probably did not make a whole lot of money. Our street was not very busy. We didn't have a lot of foot traffic. So, number one lesson in real estate is location, location, location.
Learned that as a 5-year-old.
As a 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. We then moved from Southern California, San Diego to Southern Oregon.
Mm. From sunny to always raining.
Four seasons. So, you know, we're very close to the Northern California border there.
Yep.
It was an amazing childhood. Me and my brother building, you know, tree houses, forts, going hiking, camping. Nice. All sorts of places with a young Pat Gentry.
Oh my God. So you met Pat when you were like kids, high school?
Yeah, kids.
All right. Well, what were you guys busy with? So this is a throwback. Shout out to Sprout Solutions, our sponsor also, by the way.
Yeah. So I mean, just anything outdoors, you know, building snowmen, then blowing them up. there's some videos of us on YouTube somewhere. So
that's amazing.
Don't look too hard. We had an amazing childhood. It was, you know, one of those childhoods where it was like, you know, be home before dark and just do something.
Right. But when you were growing up, did you have any side hustle and whatnot? That's
I did have a few side hustles. I had pet watchers. I even had a little business card. We would go to, you know, somebody had a dog or cat. Mm-hmm. We would, for $10 a day, we'd go and, you know, play with them, throw the ball and make sure they had food.
Nice.
The ball.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people, you know, they'd go on vacation for a week and need to make sure their house was kind of looked after. Mm-hmm. And I, at that time I was only on a bicycle.
Okay.
Or, you know, I wasn't old enough to drive a car. And right. So, you know, I did have to ride my bike and then, you know, go, some fresh water in the dog's bowl and, you know, stick some dog food in there.
Nice.
So, yeah, I guess there was always a little bit of that stuff. And then I got into helping my grandmother with her apartments and, you know, painting.
There you go.
Painting houses during the summer, ripping out carpet, ripping out windows or screens and, you know, literally having to clean places that were kind of destroyed. It was a lower income, like housing. Yeah.
And then you do fixer uppers and flip them.
She would keep them as rentals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She had like quite the portfolio, probably like 30 properties or something.
So that's your very early hustle. Because who would have thought that, you know, you'd be running so many.
My grandpa got remarried and this lady kind of had a real property hustle.
Right.
She had quite a, yeah. So. She, you know, she took me in as one of her own grandsons, needed the cheap labor. Clearly, mm-hmm. She only had like girls on her side of the family. So
I was the only dude available.
She gave me a beater truck to drive around in. And it was like when you turned it off, like the engine kept running for like another 30 seconds. Like it was not probably the most environmentally friendly Toyota pickup truck.
Hey, but if it gets you to point A to point B, that works. But
it was great. I mean, just to have a vehicle when you're, you know.
Correct.
When you're 16.
And then when it's in the winter in freaking Oregon, my God, you need something that is going to keep you warm for sure. Right. Now, yes. I want to understand. So after now you go there, I'm literally looking at your LinkedIn. I'm a little blind. The only thing I know of you is the stuff that you told me prior to the meeting and the stuff that also Patrick told me.
Okay.
As you guys growing up a little bit. But you went to Oregon State. Right.
Yes.
When you're in college, what are the foundational skills you learned?
So my brother-in-law was in pre-med and he's like, look, this is a really great way to, you know, earn a living that will, kind of set you up, pretty well. Mm-hmm. So I took some pre-med classes and quickly discovered dissecting frogs was not for me. and organic chemistry, biology, like
right.
basically failing out of those, quickly, changed my major. Into business and got into that and then got into information management, which was one of the kind of the courses. And I took a minor in healthcare administration.
Wow.
So international business, minor in healthcare administration. I did a study abroad term in Denmark.
Wow.
In Aarhus. Everything was in English, fortunately, because I didn't speak any Danish. Not that many people do. Right. And went back. Was working in the summers in Palo Alto at Stanford University.
Valley. Right. Okay.
Pat Gentry's brother was going to school there.
Okay.
We were best friends.
Nice.
Roommates. And we ran some sports camps there. And then I got a job with a software company, Palo Alto, right across from Facebook's office of like 20 people.
And this is a software consulting in Cambria or Cambria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So now you're right in the middle of Silicon Valley.
Right in the heart.
You know, 0406, Facebook was literally just trying to...
20-something employees.
Correct, yeah. Right? What was the vibe like in Silicon Valley at that point? And what did you learn?
It had just kind of pulled itself up from the dot-com crash.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was lucky in terms of where I kind of got out. Like, you know, I wasn't involved in any of that. I didn't have enough money to lose in the stock market. Mm. To be kind of negatively affected. And I graduated from university in 2004.
Mm.
So the economy kind of had, you know, got back on its feet.
Right.
And Silicon Valley, you know, like all the traffic had kind of gone away.
Mm.
And it was just kind of picking back up. So it was really, it was exciting, you know? Yeah, it's exciting to be in software. It was exciting to be in Palo Alto.
Right.
A lot of smart people. I mean, you know, just you'd meet so many different people and you would just absorb it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, in that setting, right, I want to understand the core foundational skills that you built. Because then in software, it's not just all being devs, right? It's a team effort of a lot of multifunctional skills that that allow a software company to thrive.
Sure.
What were those things that you started doing early, and what were the skills that you developed over time?
Yeah, so I was more on the consulting side. So I would kind of sit with clients and get out of their head what they wanted to do, and then translate to devs that weren't maybe great at that kind of conversational.
The buffer in between.
Yeah, I was kind of the buffer, like account manager. But the owner of the company kind of took me under her wings and just said, look, do you want to learn programming, or do you want to help me troubleshoot some of the software?
Okay.
Because I kind of had like an eye for it. And I did study like information management, but I wasn't a developer.
Right.
And I became a self-taught developer. Copy and paste coder.
I remember this. Yes. One of the first things you told me when you first met in person was you're the guy that built Sprout's MVP.
Version one.
V1.
For me. Yeah, for our company. Yeah.
Look at him now acquiring companies left and right.
And version two. I was working with a small team on version two when I decided to invite Pat to help just manage it, because it was, you know, it was a distraction from my day job.
Right. Yeah, but oh my God. Again, look at Sprout now. Again, this is the early hustle's paying off.
Yeah.
Now, what were those foundational skills? Because I've had several self-taught coders or devs out here. But back then, you don't have the luxury of having YouTube University. But right now, all you need to do is...
We had Experts Exchange and, you know, some of those other kind of communities.
How difficult was that? What was the learning curve that you had to overcome?
I wasn't doing anything, you know, groundbreaking, right? I was doing information management systems, HR records. Like, it's pretty static information, right? But we try to make it very user-friendly in terms of entering data, reminding people of certain events, like their annual appraisals.
Right.
If a visa, like if it was a foreign worker that, hey, your visa is expiring, you know, need to, you know, get back down to Bureau of Immigration for renewal, like just pretty basic things.
Yeah.
And it was really when we started getting into payroll, when we found out how complex and there's, you know, maybe 1,000 ways to do payroll, and many of the companies probably don't even do it by the book.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's when I found out the challenge of that.
And that's a very unique hustle, because you come from the PM's role, which is basically the intermediary between clients and devs. And typically they speak very different languages.
Speak very different languages.
Right.
Yes.
And then now you go to the dev side and you're now very right in the thick of it, the thick of creating the solution for the problem. Did that change how you were wired and to solve problems? Because devs are literally problem solvers.
100%.
They're engineers. And they're wired to literally dissect each problem and write it in code. Did that change the way you know, look at things when you're doing that?
As not being an engineer, you know, I kind of looked at it more from the artistic standpoint, where code, you can write code probably 10 different ways that could solve the same, you know, you take an input and you can translate it to become an output. And it's half art, half science.
Yes.
And the art part, you know, I thought was also quite interesting.
Mm. So this is where I want to do a deep dive a bit. Because a lot of people, I've worked with devs for over 10 plus years now. And I always say, right, okay, sometimes to a fault, devs can be very, very rigid. Like, I'm a Ruby on Rails guy. I was solved it like an old Ruby on Rails guy. And sometimes... Yeah. But sometimes I just really need an MVP. I need a page at functions that I can show that I can sell. It doesn't have to work.
Yeah.
You don't need to give me 2 sprints to be able to give that out.
Correct.
Right? But how do you balance the art and science part? Because of course, you don't want to tell the dev that, hey, stop whatever you're doing, because that's your art. And you're going to hurt feelings in that process. But also, that push and pull of, hey, I just need something that I can sell at the moment. I'm in sales. I need to sell something.
Yeah, there's developers that want to do it perfectly.
Correct.
And they want a full week or 3 weeks to do it perfectly. Mm-hmm. And then there's some that will understand that you're looking for a quick shortcut because there's no money in the project unless someone's about to sign and pay
exactly.
for the project. Uh-huh. And having it done perfectly doesn't mean that we're going to have cash mm-hmm. coming in.
Correct.
So I can pay you. And they don't understand developers don't always understand the commercial aspect of what we're trying to solve for.
Yes.
And that money just doesn't appear out of thin air.
Right.
A lot of times.
That's the ones that really break that or are able to cross the chasm are those devs that are able to understand, this is why it's not perfect. It sucks that we're going to have to do this, but
yes,
the money is here. We need to get these things going.
So the money only goes so far too.
Correct.
And you can, I always say, look, you know, this is version one. We'll always come. I know you don't love mm-hmm. maybe how quickly we put this together, but we can always come back and
make it perfect.
And make it better.
Right.
But don't Absolutely. Let best be the enemy of kind of good.
I love it. Now, yeah. Okay. Now, you based on LinkedIn, you did this 2004-06. And this is where it gets really interesting because under the same company, is it? You now chief operating officer of Cambria Software Philippines. Is this what led you to go here?
Yeah, they we had a Filipino dev okay. with a family in San Francisco area. And All he's right. like, I love the Philippines. I'm from there, okay. but don't send me and my family back there. Because, you know.
He's like, I want to come back.
No, no. I'm real good. Like, everything's great for me and my family in the States. I'll go, you know, find a place for Mike to stay.
Right.
I'll be there for a week. I'll see my family and then I'm coming back, but we'll send Mike out. So I left December 30th, 2006 okay. and arrived to a hungover Philippines on January 1st. Like, I didn't realize I lost a day flying. And I didn't realize it, but there was two flight attendants sitting right in front of me okay. on the flight. And a flight attendant brought them glasses of champagne mid-flight and said, hey, it's whatever, New Year's, like we're crossing some dateline.
Right.
Like, it just didn't make sense to me. I didn't really, you know, travel enough across international datelines to understand
right.
losing so much time. Yeah.
I had the same experience last year. First time ever crossing. I went coast to coast and mid-flight, the DST kicked in.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what the hell is going on? And people was like, yeah, it's going to automatically clean. My watch was manual.
Yeah.
So I was like, what time is it really now? I'm so confused. And I couldn't comprehend that. Oh, shoot. It's
spring just, forward, fall right? back.
It's yeah. like, oh, man, this is so confusing for a Filipino that has standard time.
Year round.
Yeah. Like, what the hell's going on? But
yeah.
no, okay. You get here. 07, software and BPO is already here, right? There's a little bit.
In its infancy.
Right. Very yeah. infancy.
Yeah.
07, that's actually when I took my first job as a call center agent. That's how I learned how to speak this way.
Wow.
Right. I've never been to the States. The only time I've been to the States was 2018.
Okay.
That's also already when I sold my second company.
There you go.
So, but I credit the BPO industry for telling me the most important skill that I've learned in my life. No, how to speak American.
Oh, God.
That's it. I knew how to communicate.
Okay.
But how to speak American, how to handle customers. Because I did tell them
American accent is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. American accent. Because again, I used to speak like this, Michael McCullough. Okay, it won't be beautiful if I talk to you like this. So I had to give myself an edge. And again, I learned that very early on in my life.
Yeah.
So credit to BPO industry. But walk me through what you saw and what's the opportunities that you've seen, especially being in software early on, because BPO back then was very much voice-driven. What was that like?
Yeah, that's right. So the majority of the clients, I think, were kind of coming over to do contact center work.
Right.
But we were one of those companies that came over to do very high level. You know, we were paying developers anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 a month.
Ooh, that's which is cheap.
But that was a lot. That's a lot of money for the Philippines.
Correct.
$3,000 to $5,000
coming from the U.S.
But that's cheap coming from Palo Alto.
Right.
And we were getting, you know, senior guys, you know, 10 years experience.
Devs here?
Devs in the Philippines.
Wow.
And it took me a while. You know, I'd probably interview 20 people. It'd take me 2 or 3 weeks to interview 20, and we'd hire maybe one.
Hmm.
So we kind of got the team up to about 15 plus. You know, very, very
hundreds
senior
of
devs.
Interviews that you had to do.
Yeah, hundreds.
How did you even source that out? Because back then, again, let's just call it what it is. There's still a dev shortage here in the Philippines.
It was job street back then.
Chop Street. But now, in terms of walk me through, like, what were the stacks you were trying to build for? Because at the end of the day, very early, what, still doing Java, PHP? What was that like?
Yeah, so we were mostly a .NET, some PHP.
.NET, okay.
And we were doing some programs in a program language called Delphi.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was basically whatever random software a client was using.
Right.
Historically, they're running legacy stuff and they needed to update it to do more. So whatever the client was using, we'd have to find someone that had that skill set.
Got it.
Is this your, it could be Java or it could be some of these other.
Makes sense. Is this your very first foray of how the arbitrage is such a beautiful
thing? The labor
thing.
Arbitrage. Yeah. Right. Because, you know, in the US, we were charging $140 an hour for custom programming work.
Wow. And here the going rate is.
Well, we weren't paying. I mean,
Of course, definitely. Yeah.
We were then charging. We had an onshore rate and an offshore rate. So we had $140 onshore and a $70 offshore rate.
$70. That's a margin right there. $70
an hour. Yeah.
Easy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I was an operations guy and I was making sure all of our, every hour had to be accounted for in a programmer's day. We were like lawyers or accountants or something like that, right?
We're professionals.
Everyone has 8 hours in a day.
Yeah.
Every single hour has to be billed. If you don't have a job, you have to do learning. You have to bill it to like learning.
Got it.
Or you're working on maybe an internal tool, but every single block of time had to be billed against a job code. And at the end of the week, all your time had to be in. Because then that went to invoicing, which is super important for cash flow, salaries, everything else, right?
Everything falls out of that.
And right. I was pretty militant with the team because we built it from ground up.
Right.
And they just understood the culture. They are very good about doing their time. In the US, people wouldn't enter their time for like 30 or 60 days and then enter it in later and then bill shock with clients. And
yeah.
So the owners of the company really appreciated kind of, you know, the management style that we were able to, and the culture that we set up in this office.
But what last question before we take our first break.
Yeah.
What were the hardest parts coming in, right? Literally in New Year's with a new country. You probably didn't know much people. What were the hardest parts you had to overcome to make this work? Because of course the outcome, you told us about it. I'm pretty sure there was a lot of pain that you had to go through to make that work.
Yeah, there was a lot of pain. I mean, just trying to get a PLDT DSL was like you had to know somebody who knew somebody that knew somebody. And a shout out to like my account manager, Jeff. Like,
shout out.
Yeah. Jeff at PLDT. Yeah, he got it done for us eventually.
Right.
And that was a real challenge. I mean, really, like,
what was a bandwidth like?
I think it was a 2.5 megabit per second DSL line. Yeah, 2007. And we had just had that earthquake in Taiwan.
Yep.
That knocked out two of the main cables. Links, the cables. Right. So the whole country's internet was like I almost didn't think it was going to work because the internet was so slow.
Right.
Yeah. It was like, there was like certain internet cafes that were on Eastern that had a different line and that one was better. And it was, that was a challenge for, I think probably the first 2 months I was here before those links got restored.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what about the nuances? Like, you know, culture, language, did people call you Pogi and all that?
I got Joe a lot.
Right.
Hey Joe. And, I got sir, and that sir
that
drove
was
me,
weird. For
sir
sure.
drove me crazy. I was 25 years old. Like, and, you know, most people were as older as you know. Yeah, I was pretty young, so to be called sir. I mean, I worked on them constantly. Like, dude, like don't call me sir. Like, it's just weird. And you know, the core team, probably the first five employees, finally got it, and they would finally call me Mike, which I appreciated.
Right.
But then, like the next 10, and just.
Everyone is Sir Mike.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's always Sir Mike. It's and even today, like I don't fight it anymore.
It's going to be hard.
It's hard.
You have to have someone who's going to police like, nope, don't call that guy, sir. Nobody calls somebody, sir.
Yeah.
But it works. I got this in a call center. Every single company that I've created, except the new one that I've created, I have a new side business called Papa Pressure.
Okay.
It's a pressure washing business. Nobody does this here.
Oh, I love
a
it.
Service.
I love it.
Right? And Papa is a prefix of to do, I will pressure. So, So I'm going to clean the whole Manila up because it's filthy. Right? But I don't want nobody to call me just run there, a random schmuck from, it's like, hey, run. Like every single company I've created, guest list, party file, chatbot, P&A.
Yeah.
call center style. EOP. Yeah. No, sirs. It works because it also removes the stigma of this weird thing that you have to put people on a pedestal and you can't communicate.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, I was the non-programmer working with programmers, right? These guys were, you know, from a program standpoint, like, you know, brilliant.
Right.
I mean, this team that we were able to hire with that budget, you know, these guys were rock stars.
Absolutely.
They were really, really great. The US clients, couldn't be happier.
Right.
He's got, you know, great, great work ethic. Just fun to work. Just really fun people. Like we, you know, every Friday night we're doing, you know, I was buying buckets of beer and we'd go, you know, karaoke.
I did not gain weight with all the rice and beer here. That didn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, I still work out. yeah.
That's amazing. All right. Now let's take our first break. And when we come back, we will now talk about how did this experience technically materialize more and how that led to creating KMC. We'll talk about that more after the break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate their growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24.
And we're back in the break. We are still with Michael McCullough, who then told us the origin of how he got here in the Philippines and through devving. So after Cambria, right? Or Cambria.
Cambria,
You still did a couple of similar setups, but what was the next few stints that you did and what did you discover about now the potential of doing offshoring or BPO technically
let me just tell you how kind of I ended things with Cambria.
Okay.
They love the operations and setup that we got going in Manila.
Okay.
And they said, look, why don't you come back to San Francisco and run the San Francisco office?
Oh, okay.
Now the office was, everyone was twice my age. They're 50, right. Kind of, you know, foreign developers, Russians and Eastern Europeans. And
yep.
Not the same culture. Like we weren't going for beers and pizza on Friday nights, right? Couldn't even get them out to lunch. They wouldn't even really come into the office.
Come back.
But they wanted me to go back,
and
just the culture wasn't the same. Like my heart was really here in the Philippines, right?
So you fell in love with the Philippines.
Philippines
right
first.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah, no girls yet. we'll talk about that later.
The country.
All right. And I was like, look, I did an amazing job for you guys. I know how much money you're printing here because I'm getting the invoices in every week, and you should cut me in, like give me 10% of everything we bill.
Right.
And, or give me 10% of the company or, you know, came in guns a blazing and like, yeah, that's never going to happen. Good luck. And I said, well, then I guess I have to like resign.
Makes sense.
And, and
you saw the paper trail.
Yeah. Right? I mean, when you see the numbers and
yeah, like, that makes sense. And you're not getting a cut of that.
And I'm not getting cut of it. And I'm taking calls, you know, with clients in America at midnight.
Yep.
You know, on like the Thursday nights and whatever it is, because that's when they're waking up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just kind of felt that, you know, my efforts, you know, I wasn't getting any equity. Let's just put it that way. And in the Silicon Valley, it's all about like the graffiti artists of Facebook, you know, got a few shares that you know, made them worth, you know, millions and millions of dollars. The receptionists at YouTube, you know. So I'm coming from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Was that the itch that then technically took you on? Because again, when you want equity, that's an entrepreneurial mindset already. That's like, all right.
You want to be an owner.
Right. You want to own a piece of what you're hustling for.
Correct.
Right. Now, because at the end of the day, you're as entrepreneurs, hustling is not alien to us. We know that we're going to hustle, but we know that I'm doing this for me.
And there's a pot of gold potentially.
Exactly. Yes. Because there's a bigger pot of gold towards the end of the rainbow, right? Now, when you realized this, what were the next opportunities you took on? And did you ask for equity at that point?
Well, so obviously I asked for equity. That was a pretty clear no.
No, it was a hell no.
That was like a nice try. Mm-hmm. They didn't. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they thought about it for about 2 seconds, but
nope.
But no. So then one of my friends was working on a startup and he's like, look, we have an equity package. Mm. It's not a lot of base pay, whatever, 26. Like, I keep my costs low.
Right.
And I was working for a startup and we were doing, you know, some interesting stuff. It was content editing.
Oh.
Yeah. That was at Neuron Global. And working for a very, very bright guy. He was, ex-MIT. So, you know.
Ooh. Yeah. The operations are still here.
And the back office was here. So sales was in the U.S.
All right.
And, I mean, he was great. You know, the only thing I can really say is, like, he was just such a great mentor. And I was contemplating going to business school. He had, you know, gone to post-grad school. So working under him, just seeing how he lays out ideas and ideates and writes things down and takes notes and action items. Like he was very, very smart and really good attitude, good energy, all that stuff. So again, I learned a lot from him. And then 2008 came in.
Now, what? Okay, 2008. Of course, we all know that, you know, that's where the Big Short happened, right? Mm. Whatever you want, real estate market crash in the U.S. and whatnot. But I want to understand first
the global financial crisis, really,
right? But of course, we all know who caused it, right? A couple of guys and whatnot, right? Yeah. All right, but I want to understand first the role of the mentor that you talked about.
Yeah,
because a lot of entrepreneurs, if they're fortunate. Some guys, I'm so baffled how they're able to do it without having a role model. It's so hard if you don't have someone you can emulate with, little habits, advice, or everything else in between. But what are those things that you learned from this mentor? If you want to give him a shout out, let's give him a shout out too.
Yeah, Sedarius. Said Perota.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's gone on to raise, you know, with the new company, I'm trying to remember the name, but he raised $50 million from... Tiger Global.
Yeah.
And he had like a 100-person team in Ukraine.
Are you
which
kidding
then
me?
Obviously fell apart during the war. Right, and, correct. You know, two years ago, I guess, had to relocate them.
But what were these indelible marks that you mentioned these writing down, but what are those things that Darius was doing?
I mean, he was just, you know, he was a guy that was willing to think big.
How big?
Yeah.
Global domination big?
I mean, he just had, you know, kind of that big picture idea, and you know, maybe from either a smaller upbringing or the Philippines, you know, you're happy just to like dominate Salcedo Village. Mm-hmm. You'd be happy just to turf little, war Salcedo
big
Village.
Big fish in a small pond. Type
yeah,
of thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, now with that learning, then again, walk me through the 2008 crash, because a lot, it's very akin now to what it is, like funding winter. I mean, it's not as bad. There's wars and whatnot.
Yeah.
But there's different opportunity in adversity. What did you find here and how did that
lead to the
next? We literally
went from talking to our clients on the phone in September to calling them the next week and the line has been disconnected.
Wow. Like
100-person companies or 200-person companies.
Gone overnight.
Just like literally gone overnight.
Oh my God.
Like 1 week later. Like that quickly.
How did that affect you guys out here?
I mean, we just started running out of cash. I mean, these were paying clients. Like, we were cash flow positive coming into September. I mean, we had to push really hard to get cash flow positive as a startup. And then we were like trying to pivot and trying to come up with
scramble for whatever.
Scramble and try to pivot. And I just kind of didn't think that the direction was going to really save us.
Right.
And basically, I was the last employee December 15th, 2008.
Are you kidding me?
I had to close out the office. And we had just signed a 3-year lease. And so he asked me to find a subtenant to take on the lease.
Is this the first evolution? But I want to understand first one thing, how that felt. So I went through that. My first company obviously failed. A lot of it's my fault. I say again, it's compounding little mini cuts that if you don't nip it in the bud, it will balloon. And it's now you have a snowball to push up the hill and gravity against you. But what did that feel?
I can tell you it feels pretty shitty to lose your job December 15th. and zero severance. It was just like, there's no severance. I mean, well, my friends tell me there's like a mandatory severance for no. There's no money in the account. There's like $1,000 in the bank. Like, there's nothing. Like, it's all gone. You're on your own. Yeah.
Right.
And you're just like,
But letting people go part because you love them. I mean, you built that team.
People saw the writing on their wall, and luckily the job market in the Philippines has just kind of always just gone up and to the right.
Right.
I mean, you know, salaries, demand.
Yep.
These are super qualified employees that, you know, had been working very closely with foreigners that were, you know, really pushing them. And I mean, they all got absorbed. They all got jobs instantly.
But being the last, be the captain of the ship
obviously it wasn't a fun feeling. And it went by like those last 3 months from like clients just like not picking up the phone.
Shit.
It was literally.
I know the feeling.
I mean, it was us doing shots of vodka and Red Bull and then getting on the phones and calling people. That's what it was. It was. Yeah. It was like do or die. Like, okay, let's, you know, take a couple shots and start, you know, cold calling and just seeing what works.
But nobody picks up.
And then just, less and less like, well, there's a website and then there's a phone number and it doesn't work.
Oh, my goodness. Now, okay. This last thing that you were asked to do, you had a lease, you had to sublease it. What sparked into that very dark time that was supposed to be like the end of the road? And how did that materialize into TMC?
Yeah. So, you know, I was very aware of kind of the online portals at the time and got some photos and a little description and my contact details. And a bunch of people started inquiring for the 35 seats or something, you know, 35 desks or 40 desks or something in this room.
Right.
And it was like magically like 220 person companies needed office space.
Okay.
And this was plug and play and, you know, there's even computers. I mean, everything was set up, ready to go. And they took it over and I was getting 10% a month. Finder's fee. It was, I don't know, 200 bucks or something like a month. And I just said, if I did this like 10 times, that's $2,000 a month in the Philippines, 100,000 pesos a month, you know, coming in.
Yeah, pretty comfortable.
In 2008, right? You're pretty comfortable on that.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, hitting your bank account every month. Like,
wow.
It was kind of.
Where were these leads coming from?
Craigslist and OLX and, you know, whatever those.
Right. It all led to your number?
Sulit.
Yeah. Shout out RJ David. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
No, but and they all went through you.
Yeah, they all went to my personal cell phone.
Wow.
My smart number. Yeah.
Someone might dig that up somewhere right now and figure out those listings and creep them out. But okay, now you have this. But you were doing this for a finder's fee, right? When did it cross your mind that, you know what? Holy shit, I can do this for myself.
Yeah, so I was living with my business partner, the K in KMC.
Who's K, by the way?
So let me give you the
etymology of KMC.
Sure. So it's a guy named Greg Kittleson, an American. He's got to be about 8 years older than me.
Got it. How'd you meet him?
I met him the first week I was in the Philippines. His partner, the C, Amanda Carpa-Rufino, was a lawyer, ex-PwC, and she had met with BOI, and I'd come over. Kind of on a BOI junket trip.
Gotcha.
Like, so we'd register BOI in San Jose, California. Mm-hmm. Then you'll meet with our colleagues and, you know, they'll help you invest in the Philippines.
So KMC is Killison, McCullough, Carpo.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. So I met them the first week I was here under Cambria.
Okay.
And I hired them to incorporate us.
Ah.
And so they were, everything's super slow. And, you know, I'm
it's still slow now, by the way.
So, yeah, it's still slow to incorporate. Yeah. It wasn't any faster back then. And, you know, I was just like constantly grilling Amanda because I was getting constantly grilled by the U.S. Like,
What's taking this forever?
It takes like a 3 days to incorporate an LLC in California or something.
Right,
like,
why is it? Singapore's overnight.
Why is it like
been a month or two?
Two and a half months.
Uh huh. That's amazing. That's crazy. So, okay, KMC, was it basically the child of that experience of you trying to sublease? And how did you then decide it? All right.
Yeah.
Bet. Let's do it. This is the business model.
So, Cambria had subleased some office space with Kittleson and Carpo.
Ah, so you became the client.
So we
now.
Were all kind of in a shared desk environment. Like, we all had desks.
Got it.
Like, there was no... There were some rooms, but yeah. So we were all kind of just working out in the open, and Greg and I really hit it off. Went on a date. Like, you know, there was a couple guys, a couple girls.
Yep.
And it worked.
Magic happened.
The magic happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 8 years older than me, and you know, kind of just in a different stage of life and
right
than I was, and. But, you know, we connected over some stuff and ended up being roommates. And then he kind of saw me working for this company that was, you know, kind of falling apart. And we were kind of...
I saw this process of you trying to save it and subleasing it and everything else.
We set up a website. So at Kittles and Carpo, they were constantly incorporating businesses. And the first thing a business needs is a business address.
Makes sense.
And they need to find a place for their 5-person team. It's going to go to 10 that they think could go to whatever 500.
Got it.
And doing these 5-year leases doesn't make a lot of sense for them.
Right.
So, yeah.
And that's a big ask, especially if you're a startup starting out and you're just trying to get 5 Filipinos to really help you out. Why do you have to go through all of this bullshit in between, right? If you're just trying to like set up shop, outsource it out, take the advantages and fruits of labor arbitrage and also great talent that's out here.
Yeah.
Right. Why do you have to go through that? So now it makes sense to you. You have partners who helps incorporate.
Yeah.
You're the guy who knows how to build teams and also sublease it out now.
And find, right? Sublease real estate.
Right.
And
also go upstream all the way to where we're to get deal flow and whatnot. Now that's where the magic is.
Yeah.
How did you then get this ball rolling? Because my God, the way you guys scaled. I had never seen like that. I was telling you this when I like wrestled a bit.
We just yesterday were in the papers for the Inquirer top 10 growth companies.
Ooh-wee. So again, dude, here's the thing. I know you hit it off at one point pre-pandemic. I was like, holy shit, these guys are big. Because when I do my speed check, my internet check, and they pull it tells me where the data
the
is coming from, the service coming from.
Yeah.
It's a KMC solution somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? What is going on here? Because typically it's Globe, Smart Summer, whatever. Someone's channeling me stuff, but you're the only non-telco that I typically see giving me data. It's like how that already was a sign.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, who's they're up to something.
Yeah, so, we have a speed test server that we host.
Amazing. So how did you then go from, all right, KMC, what were the first few steps that you had to really get this going? Because you already had the formula, but now it's you.
Yeah, so, you know, we're in a shared space. And that lease was coming to an end. And
where's the first office, by the way?
It was Trident Tower.
Trident.
So it was right next to RCBC, where the old Shell station was.
Got it. All right. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, and then we moved into Chatham House, which is kind of a lesser known building in Salcedo Village, and then
right at along Rufino Avenue,
yes,
near 100%. The KFC that big ass KFC.
Wow, right. Yeah, you know,
Salcedo I know my Village. Hood, bro.
Yeah, yeah, and then very quickly, you know, we're doing you know site selection work for these kind of smaller companies, and we hired our employee number one. Name is Cha. Or Rosario Cha Carbonell. She's still with us today.
Shout out, chat. Mm-hmm. There you go.
She's been with us almost 15 years this March.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
that's a long time.
Pretty sure you gave her equity already. For her to stay here that long.
Well, you know, we offered it to her on day one and she said no.
What? Why did you not take it?
Yeah. We've since forced her to take it, I think in 2016. And she was a little more open to taking it then. But yeah, in 2009. You can't eat equity. You can't eat options in the Philippines.
Oh my God.
It's just
It's people just now know better now.
Well,
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. Given our series of successes,
of course,
I think people are begging to get into the cap table now. You know,
the Sierra Leone diamond equivalent.
Yeah,
right.
Correct. So anyway, so we found a space in Rufino Tower.
Yeah.
It happened to be Amanda's Amanda's uncle's. Floors.
Yeah. That whole street is called Rufino.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So, but that building, Rufino Tower,
right?
It's strata title. So not all the owners are.
Right.
But we found a very workable space. It was pretty much fully fitted out. We had to buy the furniture and nobody had ever used it because of also the global financial crisis.
Of course. Right.
So they fitted out, I mean, never been used. And we got it kind of for maybe 50 cents on the dollar. We probably didn't negotiate that enough, but it was perfect for us. 50 workstations. We were going to operate in one of the smaller rooms and we would lease out kind of the other 30.
Right.
And we did. We leased them out and that client went from 30 to another 50 desks. So we took more space in the building. That's your next kind of, and then we went to Piccadilly Star and BGC and took a half floor that leased out and took the other half floor and that leased out and then took the last remaining half floor that leased out. Now we were like pedal to the metal, you know, down to our last peso. My girlfriend at the time and her family's like, look, we'll give you a loan for a year.
Oh
yeah. And it was pretty sizable given that we were just boyfriend, girlfriend at the time.
Right. Right.
And she's like, you know, you better get that last half of an office in Piccadilly. Like, and yeah, I mean, she really, you know, pushed. No, and believed, which is huge.
What amazes me is, again, if we're not trying to piece this together, they bootstrapped this.
We bootstrapped it all the way till March 2019.
Holy shit.
So 10 full years of bootstrapping it.
Oh my God. Okay. Now I want to understand the financial discipline and the financial techniques that allowed you to bootstrap it because this is a cash flow game. You don't get enough cash. One domino that stalls to fall, it will affect everything. What were these foundational techniques that you were able to get through to make sure invoices come through?
Yeah.
Because it's a whole ecosystem now, and we'll discuss that in a bit. But that it starts with that. How did you make sure that you guys are paid on time and make sure that, you know, it doesn't get stalled? Because the Philippines has a very, very bad habit.
Of not paying you on time.
Yeah, 92% of people don't pay on time. Yeah. And the big fish are the worst offenders.
100%. Right. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote a BizBuzz piece. I was quoted in a BizBuzz in 2020 about had just the top five companies paid their vendors net 30, it would have released something like, you know, $1.5 billion of receivables. They would have gone into the SME market.
Correct.
And they could have then released to their subcons and employees. And we wouldn't have needed banking and finance.
Exactly.
Like, just have the big boys pay on time.
But they were scared of money mode at that point.
Right? Yeah. Everyone was scared to run out of money. So we use some software, invoicing software that would automatically send, you know, aggressive.
Built in-house?
No. It was called Get Cashboard.
Ooh.
I don't know if it still exists anymore, but it was not BIR compliant. Unfortunately, so we had to stop using it, but we definitely used it and we got paid and we were getting paid on PayPal. I mean, we would take diamonds, we would have taken, you know, gold bricks, like we said,
ivory,
you know? We would have taken any forms of payment, pretty much any forms of currency.
Mm-hmm.
We just made it really easy to do business with ourselves.
Got it. And this is cross-border payments because a lot of the clients are overseas.
Correct. Correct.
Makes
and sense. So actually PayPal worked pretty well. I mean, there were credit card fees and we would kind of charge that back. And
Now, how did you build that ecosystem? Last question before we take our first break, because I remember Patrick telling me that, you know, one of the biggest pain points you guys had to go through it's okay. You went from literally the business is you lease a property, you sublease it out.
Yes.
But you got to fill that place with competent employees, depending on what that is. So now you're building a whole ecosystem of not just giving them seats, but filling out those seats with people and who's a
recruitment.
Super diverse spectrum.
Yeah.
How did you fill that up? And of course, pay them on time. Shout out to Sprout because Patrick told me about this.
So recruitment's probably everyone's biggest challenge around the world, not unique to any company or any country.
But a lot of them are unqualified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky to be working with some very good brands early on. Mm. So one of the first big brands I remember signing with us was eBay.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And we were like, can you just PayPal us? They owned PayPal at the time.
Yeah,
and
of course.
They're like, no. We have to why are you out of Switzerland? We're like, okay, fine. Can you just pay us though, please?
Yeah, I know.
They weren't even great about paying on time. Because it's just so bureaucratic to kind of get through the vendor.
So many layers.
Mm-hmm. So hiring for that and then saying that was one of our logos and that was in one of our offices, gave some real street cred.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we were also, many younger entrepreneurs or owners of businesses were coming to the Philippines and then they were being part of that interview process.
God.
And so wow, I'm going to get to work for this guy. He seems really experienced. He's a nice foreigner. It's a different vibe. It's a nicer kind of environment. And so those companies sold themselves. Now it was our job to get people to the interview process, which is also pretty impossible too. Just the physicality of getting somebody to show up.
KMC talents.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah. I mean,
shout out to my wife. I don't know if you know that I told you about this. She's the one running your social media, Lit Digital, for the longest time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So again, you have good content out there.
I guess.
Lit Digital, of course. My lovely wife, Noreen Legaspi Betyang.
There you go.
Running KMC. Dude, you won't believe how many times she's going, look at what we're doing for KMC. I get first dibs for what they're posting for you.
Probably more than, yeah.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah, I'm a little removed from that.
Because that's orange actually. And deep and navy blue. It's all over our house.
Good.
Yeah. See, look at this.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Mm. The mugs. He's referring to the mugs. Kittleson is in charge of marketing. Mm. So he was, he was the number one sales biz dev at every single networking event.
The hustler.
He was the true hustler. Mm. Somewhere on our path, I decided to go down the route of marrying my girlfriend.
There you go.
Having a family and probably not going out. Seven nights a week.
Settle down.
So I settled down and Greg continued to go to every single networking event, seven nights a week.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, all right, last question. Oh, sorry, I said the last question, but last question. You couldn't do this alone with just the three of you and Cha. Who were the foundational hires that you guys had on board to keep you from scaling? Because again, shout out to Patrick Gentry. We'll talk about this after the break.
Yeah.
Rule 3 and 10, as your company expands tenfold, shit breaks apart. But who are those foundational hires you had to hire?
Well, we started hiring interns
because
that's all we could afford. So we had 13 interns paying, getting 100, 150 pesos a day and some free lunch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would help us with all the, all of our SEO work. Mm. So we're doing, links, link generation, backlink content, blog posts, whatever. And that made sure that us and our websites, if you search anything about office space in the Philippines, we were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
God.
Across maybe we had 3 or 4 different domains.
Mm.
I mean, they were just destroying certain long tail keywords.
Right. They didn't probably even understand why the hell they're doing it, but
no one understood online at that time.
Yeah.
It was really early days of online marketing. And traditional real estate people didn't believe in it, it's all relationship game.
Did you absorb some of those interns, and are they still with you now?
But the story is we did absorb one of them, and her name was Carol Gaza, and then we got to that 30 employee mark,
Ooh-wee.
And she didn't report directly to the founders anymore.
Right,
she had layers, and that was kind of heartbreaking for me. And I was also pulling my hair out. I was like, not happy, super stressed. And I read a book called The Rockefeller Habits by Vern Harnish.
Mm.
And he just says, when you get to 30 employees, you don't get FaceTime with all your employees anymore. Nope. And your accounting system's going to break. And yep. I was like, dude, our accounting system's breaking. Like, we're on QuickBooks. Like, nothing's working. I don't enjoy work anymore because I'm not working with the core team anymore.
Correct.
And it really spoke to me. And then he's like, and then wait till it gets to 100 employees.
Yep. That's why I always say this. As a founder and CEO are two different jobs.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's where you literally cross that chasm, that transition from everything direct, one down founder. You're still founder at the start. And you'll never, nobody will be able to take that from you.
Sure.
But you start becoming a CEO around a 30 head count mark. Because then you start thinking.
The question is, do you really want to be CEO? Because
not everybody's built for it.
And not everyone's built for it. And I have a lot of weaknesses, you know, particularly around HR and stuff like that. So, even a little bit, you know, particularly taxation in the Philippines is still after 17 years and probably 20 different job. BIR audits, still learning all the tricks of the trade. Yeah. It's not for everyone. And it's definitely not for every founder.
Definitely.
I mean, founders could be really great product people or salespeople even.
Yeah.
And they'd probably add more value to their company doing what they love.
Exactly.
Than keeping the CEO title.
Exactly. That's absolutely true.
And you know, I've just gone through that. So we've actually announced two CEOs for some of the early businesses.
Wow.
So basically it started with KMC Mag Group. That kind of branched out to KMC Savills, which is a full service brokerage firm, roughly 400 employees.
That's what Savills is. Like, what the hell is KMC Savills?
Yeah. So Savills is the UK listed real estate services business. It's a publicly listed company, 800 offices around the world.
Holy crap. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's take our last break. And when we come back, we will now talk about that. You know, scaling, sure. What are the trips and the trades, and of course, how you also scaled. And of course, we're going to be asking you a lot of tips and tricks.
Okay.
Because there's not a lot of CEOs have seen scale like this.
That's true.
And a lot of us are going to go through that, are going through that, or are already struggling through that as we're listening to this episode. But let's talk about that more after the break.
Hey, Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again. And we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno virtual debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and loans. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers. I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, DragonPay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named Fintech of the Year at last year's Philippine Fintech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay.
And we're back in the break. We are still with Michael McCullough and told us the amazing growth. But again, we'll go right into the weeds here. Because again, before we took our last break, you mentioned that things break apart, right?
Things and, break when you grow.
As you grow. And as a founder, you need to be cognizant of where you're going to make the most impact and even reinvent yourself as a founder, even as a leader.
Yeah.
And I'll just call it what it is. Just several days ago, You guys announced a major milestone of how big you got. Can you just describe that major milestone that you guys announced?
Yeah, so it went in the newspaper. So I guess this is not private anymore. But yeah, we were one of the Inquirer growth champions.
Ooh-wee!
And for 2022, we had like a 52% annual growth rate from 2019 to 2022. And we hit 8.597 billion pesos. And that's 2022. Yeah.
I'm just trying to imagine what that 2023 number after all the efforts are done.
Yeah, we probably would have grown another 2020.
Man, you're all over the place. You guys, I've seen these new spots and what. Again, I know because my wife works with you as a supplier, but my goodness.
Yeah.
Again, the amount of amazing stuff you've done is not a fluke, but I want to understand the weeds now. So you mentioned prior to the break that you had to literally go through that process of now going from 3 and 10. Shout out to Patrick Gentry again who told me this.
Him that, by the way, because I read that book first. And that said, things are gonna break when you grow and sprout from your seven-man startup.
I had an episode, I digress a bit. On Founders Only, the sequel of Hustle Share, you can check it out on the description of this episode below. He talked about this. That when they got to 100, 300, oh my God, the type of problems you were dealing with was like, why do we have 20 people in this meeting? It doesn't make sense. And like, so it came from the Rockefeller Habits book. Right. Rule from of three Bernard and 10. Hunch. Yeah. Right. Now, it'll have that episode in the description box or no, in the show notes of this episode. But what did you learn about that and how did you prepare? Because here's what most fucked up part. Even if you know about it, when it hits you, nothing can prepare you. How did you then overcome these multiple scales of threes and tens and whatnot that you
overcome? So probably the solution or the one that's probably most effective, that's easiest to implement is the daily huddle, the stand-up huddle. Mm-hmm. That 15 minutes, okay, what are you doing today? Are there any roadblocks? Okay, what am I doing today? This is kind of the goal for the week. and your core team is just on it. And then also breaking bread with your one executives. Mm-hmm. So having lunch, breakfast, dinners with your core team, all of them.
Right. So in one go, or is it one-on-ones?
Not one-on-ones. Like he says one-on-ones are a waste of time. No one likes doing them.
Wow.
Yeah. He's like, it's much better to bring social pressure in. And if somebody comes in there, don't worry, boss, I'm going to, do these three calls and meet these three, sales prospects. Mm. It's much better to bring one of their peers in. So if they don't do it, they said that in front of their peers and the boss, and everyone holds each other a little
That's
more accountable that way.
I read this book. I don't know if you ever encountered The Trillion Dollar Coach.
Yes. I've read that.
And
very good book.
The complete opposite of what the Trillion Dollar Coach is actually trying to teach you.
Well, he holds CEOs accountable because no one holds, right? So he's the CEO whisperer.
Right.
No, Eric Schmidt.
What he says is that you still do one-on-ones. Again, at the end of the day, this is like being a dev.
Yeah. Right?
Whatever works for you, works for you. But at the end of the day, there needs to be scalable systems that you can go through things. I like that that's an approach that you've done.
Part of how he was so successful was he would join the XCOM meetings. You
still
remember that?
Goes to the weeds. Right, right.
Yeah, he would join the team meetings.
And he's just going to
sit there and just and see the politics and see the body language and then kind of be a second set of eyes and then have that one-on-one with the CEO.
Correct.
Because he's the coach. I mean, that makes sense to do it on a one-on-one basis.
Right. One thing that I learned that I implemented since I started learning is just such a basic thing, the five-item sheet. Mm. So every person that will participate in a meeting have a maximum five items to put in a one-hour maximum TOPS meeting. If you don't have any line item that you're going to submit, don't even show up. You're just going to fucking waste your time. Mm. Because at the end of the day, everybody has five items. Then the most urgent thing that will be discussed is the most common item that was put on by everybody. So if it's payroll, then we discuss payroll right away. What about payroll? What's your concern about payroll? Boom, 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 boom. Then there's a structure over every meeting. And if you're just there to spectate, don't fucking waste your time. You're not supposed to be here, right?
Well, we've done the math. Our ManCom meetings, we would have 60, 70, 80 people dial in. I mean, on Teams, it's so easy to do it, right?
There's like
every Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Anyone can kind of dial in. And part of me likes the transparency.
Yes.
That they can see the inner workings and everything that's going on. But when you do the math and you're like, wait, 80 people have been sitting here for an hour. Maybe only 40 people need to be sitting here for an hour. The 40 need to be doing real work.
No, but that's what I want to get a glimpse because max, I've grown a 65.
Sure.
Two countries, so not even close, right? But I felt that rule of 3 and 10 kick in. But when you have ManComs like that, what are the systems that you have to hold through that are like borderline 10 commandments at that level to operate a business at this scale?
So I really try to push on the ManCom to not focus on historical stats because everyone wants to show what they've done.
Okay.
I'd rather find out what you're about to do so I can either preempt it or concur that, this is happening this week. And yes, this is probably the right trajectory or your focus, your time, our resources, our money.
Right.
But if it's already been done and you're just telling me that you did it, like, I mean, it's somewhat helpful, but not really. Like that can be an annex.
Makes a lot of sense.
Like I can read, I read the ManCom PowerPoint or PDF. Mm. It gets published at about midnight or something.
Right.
And so I try to read it before I go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Probably not great for my sleep, but at least,
if there's something shitty there, you got to think about it.
Exactly.
But if it's 8.5 million pesos in 2020, you'd be sleeping like a baby for sure.
Yeah. So, of course, during COVID, that was,
Oh, of course.
That's only our gross revenue. That wasn't the profits
still,
yet.
Come on now. Right.
But there's definitely a little profit there. So I'm looking through the ManCom and there's stuff that I want to, pick apart and really spend more time on.
Right.
And I don't want to talk about historical stuff because it's already been done. I can't change it. No, none of us can change it.
What's path forward?
What's the path forward? Because we can change that. And improve that. And it's, at our scale, it's just about little tiny improvements every single day. And I call it the 1% rule. One of the ones I probably taught Pat, because I think he referenced it in one of his podcasts.
Yep.
And if we can improve 1% a day in a year, that's 365% improvement.
Right. Absolutely.
And if we can just, and you know, that's KMC. Like, it's Office version 1, Office version, you know, 1.5, Office version 2.0, 3.0, 5, and you know, now we're like, whatever, like our 8th gen kind of version of offices. And every single time it's getting better. And, you know, it blows me away to walk in to some of these offices, and the user experience amazing, and the design's amazing. And,
right. And you spin yourself like, shit,
internet's super fast. And like, you know, everyone's super impressed. So.
Now I want to understand, like, how do you now divvy up your time?
Yeah.
Like, my God, there's so much that can, I don't even know how you can not think of shit, because there's always going to be something to think of.
Yeah.
How do you divvy up your time, and how did you fire yourself from those things that you used to do to free up that time so you can do stuff that you actually need to do or want to do?
So I actually resigned from the CEO role like last March.
Okay.
To our investors and my co-founders. And they kind of called my bluff, like, you're not going anywhere. I'm like, well, I want to start a process to hire a CEO.
Okay.
And I don't think it should be me, you know, because of, you know, growing 20 to 30, 40% year over year on like already a very large base.
Yeah.
It requires a different skill set. And I don't think that was me. And we started our search February over year. So 1 year ago.
Okay.
And
you found it?
The new CEO joined Jan 16th.
Who is the new CEO?
A guy named Perry Nagpal.
Perry Nagpal.
And he's been here 17 years in the Philippines.
Wow.
Aegis People Support and Teleperformance. Wow. And, you know, came from, he's very analytical, came from kind of the BPO industry, did a stint for MoneyMax in Hong Kong.
Yep.
So, you know, kind of lived a startup environment.
And how do you even go through the process of hiring a successor for a CEO? Because you know how you run your company.
Yeah, it is tough.
And like, man, there's a very, it's like letting go of your child.
100%.
Right? That's 100%. Probably that's the feeling. But how did you find, what are those metrics? A normal hire, like, all right, a couple of layers of interview. Okay, bet.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to solve for the areas I was probably weaker in.
Okay.
And I really like, you know, what he had to say about that. And I can kind of compliment him. And, you know, now I'm doing stuff like ribbon cuttings and doing, you know, podcasts and being kind of more the face of the business while there's someone who's executing the day to day, because it's, you know, the CEO is the chief executive officer. He's executing the board's strategy and vision.
That's amazing.
And it's very hard to kind of, And everyone wants to kind of be the face,
right?
And that's, but that's not great to be the founder.
Actually, but then ready for that?
Can you also execute on everything that needs to happen on the back end?
And that's when it's sad when it's your see a startup founder, where everybody, it's kind of like a bad omen when I see that. Oh my God, this guy just wants all the publicity.
Yes,
but why are you not fucking working? Who's running the freaking
Who's actually
team?
Running it? Yeah.
Right? If a young kid, especially that just wants, you don't want to be, the real ones, the best founders that I know, at least startup founders, they're very, very picky. They don't even want the attention. That's why it's so hard to get great founders to be in this podcast.
Yes.
Because it takes time for them to say yes, or to even carve out time, because they're busy running their company.
Correct. Yeah.
Right? And this takes time because if someone's totally available, always out there, always networking, always,
then you're not running your business.
There's a pattern that you can see, like why, and then typically that gets to their head. Then when that mindset kicks in, it's just like boom. All right, it's me before the company, and that's the beginning of the end right there.
Yeah,
right, and that's sad. But how did, what were these process that you had to go through hiring Perry? Right? That you also had to control yourself. Like, oh, okay, that's that. You can't do that anymore, because you have to police that, right? And especially when that transition comes in. Because, of course, the passion will never waver.
Yeah.
It's your baby.
It's still my,
Right? How did you then detach yourself from these things?
So, I kind of birthed two kids. My eldest kid is KMC Savills. Okay. And we brought a CEO January 8th.
Another one.
Yeah. And he was, and Pat would know him very well, because when KMC was in our early days and had one of our first clients. They said, hey, we need whatever, 30 laptops.
Okay.
Well, 30 laptops at whatever, you know, $500 or $600 a laptop was a lot of money. We didn't have it.
Yep.
And so Pat and Joe invested in the business in 2009. They got, you know, 5% each.
Right.
Because we need to buy laptops and, you know, to hire employees.
Yeah.
And that worked out very well for them.
Nice.
And of course, you know, we spun Sprout out of KMC Solutions and Pat took it to, you know, whole other levels. Acquiring companies, bro.
That's it.
Yeah. He's really, I'm very.
And very resilient too. They went through shit during the pandemic. My goodness.
Yeah, it was more mental shit for him, which is very real.
Yeah.
You know,
he still had about this in our interview.
He still had very, you know, he still had cash flow. He still had clients paying him. Some of those clients were even growing, you know? So it was the mental anxiety of getting in and out of COVID that was really, you know, Pat's challenge. And again, I was, you know, on those board meeting, in the monthly board meeting calls with him.
Yeah.
As he was kind of trying to lie to himself about how he loved the job and he didn't, you know.
You can tell.
I mean, I've known him, I don't know, 30 years or something like that.
Right.
That definitely, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yep. Absolutely.
For sure.
Now, all right. The last few questions. So what keeps you up at night now? Well, it's still whack-a-mole, what are these smaller?
It's less whack-a-mole. I've given that duty to somebody else, but the rate of change has never been faster. And when you start looking at what AI can do, and I believe it's a tool and, you know, can it be for good? Hopefully, does it make the average employee in the Philippines a super human employee? Ideally, yes.
Yep.
I think we can compete potentially on a global stage, having a supercomputer behind us.
Yep.
With perfect grammar and everything else, right?
Right. Who doesn't complain?
There you go. And works 24 hours a day, seven days a week, and doesn't take, you know, 18 vacation days a year.
Or doesn't go AWOL.
Doesn't go AWOL either. Does use a lot of power.
Right.
I'm slightly worried about the, you know, the coal-fired power plants needed to turn on some of these chips that are
absolutely
being, AI is going to be highly, highly disruptive, and whatever it is today, 1 year from now, it's going to be like 5 or 10 times more powerful than what it was today.
Absolutely.
So, you know, whatever it's doing today, like is it Sora that came out with text to video?
Scary.
That's scary. I mean, that's 60 seconds in length, and there's no reason why they can't turn that to 60 minutes.
I saw the Will Smith one. I don't know if you've seen this Will Smith one. No. There's a Will Smith posted about it. You can check it on in the Instagram. So, well, last year there was an AI video that looked really goofy. Like you knew it's an AI video.
Yeah.
And the same thing published the whole thing of him eating pasta. And my God, I can't tell.
There you go. So
I cannot tell. That's one
then
year.
What happens to actors, producers? I mean, you know, a lot of the Hollywood strikes were about using AI in scripting and using AI for extras or actors.
And that's why we're in this space. P&A has a new something. You'll know in a few weeks. I'll tell Mike privately.
There you go.
On what that is.
So that's exciting. The kind of stuff that, you know, that's kind of my job now because, you know, I feel like I'm on the top of the ship. I'm not driving per se, but I've got the binoculars out and I'm looking for the next, I'm looking out for that next iceberg.
That's really amazing.
And what is it? Is it AI? Is AI going to, you know, eat all of our jobs? Is it going to accelerate, you know, certain sectors? And how do we participate in that AI economy?
God, that's super exciting. And still, again, very akin to what you talk about during MadCom or XCOM.
Yeah.
Which is what's the path forward? But you're now looking for the new frontier.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I love the fact that real estate is still a physical asset that can't just like disappear and then go to zero in value. Although, you know, potentially can go to zero in value as we see in some of the offices in America. But the physicality of actually meeting people and doing collaboration work, you know, that part's still super exciting. I mean, the metaverse that seemed to kind of die.
Right.
And I don't think I would have wanted to really be a part of that. But we do use VR when we're designing offices.
Yeah.
So we'll completely 4D walk through an office before it gets built now.
Yeah.
Which is great for the design process.
Got it. All right. Last two questions.
Yeah.
When you track back and look at again this hell of a journey, amazing from that era where you know you're just forced to sublease a property,
yeah,
and whatnot. Can you remember certain advice that was given to you that really struck a chord, and what was those best advice that you remember?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of the Vern Harnish stuff and the Rockefeller habits, you know, really spoke to me because it was like literally, you know, that's where I was like really ripping my hair out and it kind of helped me
get through this. I'm not that impressed anymore. I know where you got it from.
Oh, he got the cliff notes for me. I don't know if he ever read it, to be honest. So, when you're really trying to scale and when you get past that 30 mark and then the 100 mark and these other, you know, hurdles, your first $1 million is probably the hardest US.
Yeah.
You know, the first $1 million.
Even in the Philippine setting, first $1 million pesos is hard.
Is the hardest, probably. Yeah. And then maybe your next 50 million pesos is the hardest. And then, you know, multiples of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, once you kind of bust through those barriers and you've got, you know, either robust enough systems, processes, people, whatever, mm-hmm. that they're really. So tricks. I also had an executive coach. It worked for me. It worked well for me. He has now passed, a guy named Frank Holtz. I got to see him in Maui right before the fires. And he didn't die from the fires, but he died. I don't know. I hope he died of old age. I mean, he was, you know, mid-80s. He has a wonderful family. Mm-hmm. And the guy meant a lot to me. And he really helped not just coach me, but the next level under me. And he was just there for whether, because you know, you're always dealing with people.
Yeah.
Like even if you're a tech company, you're dealing with people.
It's people business.
Business is people.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately, right?
You cannot, unless AI really becomes really good. But
I mean, there will be some probably solo companies that are $1 billion in valuation that are just one guy and some AI.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, for the rest of us, we're going to have to hire people and dealing with people can be tough, and dealing with what people's other strategies they bring to table is also really tough. And I'm probably not a great shoulder to cry on, but he had time to listen to people. And he was that guy, and he really helped keep a lot of my talent that I wanted to keep in the company like level-headed and through the ups and downs of life, like nothing to do with work.
Yeah. Because it's technically intertwined anyway, right?
Work-life balance is
integration. Work-life integration.
Work-life integration.
Right. But what do you remember one specific thing that is just super unforgettable that he taught you? Or he asked you? Because I think a lot of this is maybe asking and then you're figuring out.
It's true that, you know, he never told me what to do. He would always just kind of ask me what did I think was best. And he would subtly kind of walk you to the answer.
Yeah.
But it always sounded like it came from.
Correct.
Came from you, right? Like, this is my idea. But he kind of walked you into the steps.
Led you to that. Yeah,
he led you to it because he was probably, some sort of psychologist and knew exactly how to manipulate you through asking the right questions. I mean, he had like some sort of psychiatry certificate. Background. So he was a psychometrics analyst or something like that.
Amazing.
So he would do 8-hour interviews for CEOs for like some of the top companies in the Philippines.
It's amazing.
Then they do psychoanalytics or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So that's amazing. So really asking and leading you to your own answer.
Yeah. So he basically didn't tell you.
Instead of telling you, hey, do this.
Yeah.
Ask you and then it's like, ooh, okay. So that's the answer.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be excited as hell.
And the other thing is I get some really good kind of tax advice, in terms of like almost every startup's now based in Singapore.
Yeah.
Holds a Philippine entity.
Yeah.
All the investors almost require that. All global investors now require that.
Yeah.
And doing that sooner than later is going to be better for you.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
It's sucky as it sounds, but that's the best way to do it.
We did
that. Chatbot, P&A for their Singapore companies, hold posts, and Philippine entities.
There you go. So the sooner you kind of figure that out, probably the better, especially it's easy to raise money.
Yeah.
And
That is amazing. Thank you so much. Mike, again, last question. What's up next? You're now looking over the top at a 500 foot tower.
That's right.
Horizon. What's up next for KMC, and what should we look out for?
Well, our job is, we have kind of two main service lines with the KMC Solutions angle, and our real goal is to make work plus life better. And I just toured our new co-living space. It'll be a lead registered. Like, this is quality.
You know,
at the same price point.
Where is this?
This is on the outskirts of BGC.
Okay, there you go.
Overlooking the Manila Golf Course.
Oh, wow. Like, that's amazing.
You know, it's got some good views and beautiful design. And I can't wait for the staff to use it once Morocco energizes us, which has been a whole nother battle. But yeah,
watch out for the 2023 numbers.
Yeah, we'll release those after our tax year.
There
April 15th, I guess, once we get through our audit.
April,
yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. But yeah, anything to make, you know, kind of life better for our employees is something we're always on the lookout for. So if there's, you know, services, products that you think will make our almost 6,000 employees' lives amazing. Better, let me know.
That is amazing. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app we're listening to, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, if we did say some links or jargon or whatever, it's going to be in the show notes on HustleShare.com. And if you also want to support HustleShare and doing content like this, please do subscribe at premium.hustleshare.com. Again, Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.